Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the one and only Savage Nation. I received an email this morning from a friend of mine, and he said, what do you think of the crack in Hillary's armor, as evidenced by her poor performance during the debate when her brittleness showed? I said, a crack in a cracker's armor creates a crumbling cocky cookie, according to Confucius Savage. Welcome to the program. Over the last few days, I mean, on YouTube, I got a really big treat. Tomorrow they'll be on the show. A 50s doo-wop group, the Earls, has written a song called Borders, Language, and Culture dedicated to Michael Savage. It's really beautiful. It's great. These guys are wonderful. You can click on michaelsavage.com to hear a real 50s group still singing their hearts out. And apparently they're big fans, and God bless them, they'll be on the show. At least some of them will be tomorrow. The phone number here, of course, is 1-800-449-8255. The website's michaelsavage.com. I have a number of things I would like to talk about, and I will. I mean, the big story to me is that one of our top generals, who is now retired, General John Abizad, has said the Mideast wars may last for 50 years. Go tell that to the pacifists in the Democrat Party. He said it will last for 50 years. 50 years. You hear this? Now, at the same time, we read that the Army has a record low level of recruits. Does anyone know why the Army has a low level of recruits? Does anyone know why the Marines have a trouble recruiting men now? I don't have any question as to why. Our first Muslim congressman, the questionable Keith Ellison, wants no voter ID at all at the booths. He wants no photo IDs, apparently so people in burqas can vote 10 times or 100 times, or perhaps jihadists can be brought in to vote and then fly back to Syria. This is what you get when you elect these wonderful individuals to office. Muslim congressman is now lobbying to have no voter ID, no photo ID to vote at all. Can you believe what's going on in your country? How it's been taken over? How it is being taken over because of the spineless politicians who won't stand up to them? Now, I'm going to talk about, there's a show on A&E, which I watched a few times when it first came out, called The Bounty Hunter. It's terrible. Basically, these look like low-grade criminals arresting lower-grade criminals. And to me, it's an insult to the police who do the real dirty work. These guys put on a big show, Dog the Bounty Hunter. You know, they strap on their flashlight and they arrest poor old junkies who've skipped bail. And I mean, it's an embarrassment, frankly. It looks like petty thuggery to me. Well, apparently they caught Dog the Bounty Hunter. And this is the interesting part here. Talking to his son on the telephone, where he uses the N-word a number of times. And the question is, how did Dog the Bounty Hunter's private conversation get recorded? Who recorded it? And how did it get publicized by the National Enquirer? And what kind of country are we living in, is the question. Now, I, for one, would love to hear Al Sharpton's private conversations, what he says about whites and Jews. I'd like to hear Jesse Jackson's private conversations as to what he says about whites and Jews. Why is it they picked on Dog the Bounty Hunter and published that, but they won't publish private conversations of some others, is the question. I don't agree that that word should be used. I don't use it in my own life. I never heard the word in my household. We never used it. My father never used it. My mother never used it. We don't use it. But apparently his son is dating a black girl. And he went on a tirade, you know. And we're going to play that in a minute. But before we do, I have some emails I want to read. You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. I'm warming up. I'm not ready yet to do the hard politics because I have a massive hangover. Now, I haven't had one in a good 3 to 6 months. And that is because I generally don't drink wine anymore. I drink beer and vodka. Usually beer only. But I'm sick of the beer. It's too cold. It's turned cold here finally, which I love. I usually have red wines. I went, and since we're friends with France again, I bought a case of 2004 Pichon, Baron Pichon Longueville. It's a Pouillac. It's great wine. It's better than the 94, by the way, which I have a few bottles left of the 94. This is so unbelievable. I give it a 95. Never mind what they rate it, 90 right now. So age it for 10 years. I said, you know what? I'm going to open it last night. And I cooked a shrimp scampi. I'm going to give you some tips on how to cook shrimp scampi. Very few people know how to make it properly. I must tell you, mine is better than any restaurant I've ever eaten in. I use a style that's from Little Italy. I got to tell you that there's very few places in America who can beat the cooking in the lower, in the Little Italy part of New York. Now, I grew up in New York, okay? I'm no expert on cooking, but I know how food should taste. I made a shrimp scampi last night. I drank a half a bottle of this red wine. I pumped out the air with the click, click, click. Figured I'll knock the other one, the other half off tonight. And I said to myself, I know I'm going to get a hangover, but it's worth it. And let me explain the wisdom of a hangover. A mild hangover is actually desirable in a certain way. You can still function fairly well, but it eliminates worries about things you can't do anything about. In other words, I can't think about Islamofascists right now. I can't think about UFOs right now. I can't think about George Bush's false conservatism right now. All I'm thinking about is my hangover, which is good. So there's a certain wisdom in a mild hangover is what I'm trying to tell you. I enjoy drinking the wine. This stuff, no fruit at all. It's like dry, tannicky, earthy, the way I love Bordeaux wines. I don't like cherry juice with alcohol, which is what so many expensive wines have become because women drink them. And I'm sorry, but the whole taste has been changed for women who are not wine drinkers. That's the reality of it. You ask anyone who knows the truth, and they'll tell you the same thing. And it's they're altering the taste. It's like beer. Beer used to be different. Then they altered the taste of beer to taste like soda pop for the non-beer drinker. You know, they threw alcohol into soda pop. Anyway, so I'm going to give you a little hint on, I could see you're not interested in politics either. You can call on politics if you want. You have the doo-wop song ready. I'm going to play it tomorrow for Rock and Roll Friday, not now. Then we're going to play Dog the Bounty Hunter's racist rant caught on tape. We'll talk about that. I've got the emails. I got the stories. I got the this. I got the that. But wait, before I take a break, here's how Michael Savage makes the shrimp scampi. Now, I got a few recipes that are very good. Remember I gave you one for leftover spaghetti? How good? Please, I don't want any hangover callers. None. Get them off the line. I don't want to hear about drink water. I know every trick in the book. They don't work. Nothing works for hangover except to immediately drink what you stopped drinking the night before the minute you get off work. The only cure is the next night. Okay? Please, stop with the cures. You're talking to the master here. I functioned all my life perfectly well knowing all the tricks in the book. Here it is. Now, I'm going to tell you how you make shrimp scampi. Now, the trick you're not going to believe. Most of you have been told to use olive oil for everything. And olive oil is a very good oil, but not for what I'm about to tell you. You can use the olive oil for the sauce if you're going to make your own red sauce. I prefer a bottled sauce that I buy, which is better than any cooked sauce. And I used to make the best red sauce. Really great. I don't bother anymore. I get it in a bottle. It's $8 a bottle. And I'm not going to give you the name because they don't advertise on the show. But it's really good. So that's out of the question. But here's what I do. You see, they're calling on politics and Hillary and it. Here's what you do. You get a large frying pan. You warm it. Don't burn it. Warm it with nothing in it. And a trick in a frying pan, by the way, is to wash it first with plain water. Even if it's washed and clean, which it should be, rinse it in water and wipe it dry with a paper towel. Get all of the residuals of whatever was in there out of there. I don't care how well you washed it before. And don't cook with any soapy smell in any of your frying pans, particularly the nonstick frying pans. You get it? So rinse it thoroughly with quick warm water. Blah, blah, blah. Put it back in the stove. Put it on low heat. Get the pan warm. Now, you're going to take your shrimp, and what I bought were frozen large ones, and they're from India, not China. Again, it's a roll of the dice. I understand that. Shrimp to begin with is a roll of the dice. They always have been, which is why they're prohibited in the Old Testament. But then again, I took a chance because I know that civilization advanced by high-protein foods, and primarily people who had access to clams and shrimp by the shore advanced first because they were able to get the readily available proteins to think. Those who were stuck with grains were more cow-like for eons than those who were able to get the high protein. So Once in a while, I have the shrimp. I don't eat them in Chinese restaurants. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, I'm not that suicidal. So anyway, they're from India, the large ones, blah, blah, blah. So now you have to defrost them, right? Luckily, I have a great microwave where you put in the amount of weight, 1 pound, and it says the weight, 1 pound, and you hit a button and it defrosts them. Wash them with cold water only. Nothing but cold water. Wash them with cold water after defrosting. Pat them dry. Now, in that pan that you've warmed up, okay, the large pan, it should have nice sides on it. You use soybean oil. Do not use olive oil. And the reason is that soy oil does not smoke as fast as olive oil. If you cook it in olive oil, the olive oil is going to flame and smoke very rapidly. You don't want that. Soy oil has a higher flash point. So you get the soy oil. Now, here's the trick. Don't put the shrimp in that oil until the oil is really warm and slightly crackling, not smoking. You want it to sizzle, but not smoke. It's a really delicate art there. Now you take your defrosted dried shrimp and you lay these babies in nicely. I skipped a step. It's because of the hangover. You take your shrimp after you patted them dry, and you dredge them in flour. That's the trick I've been trying to tell you. Most of you think that shrimp scampi has to be with butter, and you can make it if you want. I don't use butter on anything. I don't like the stuff. I don't need the cholesterol and the saturated fat. I don't even like the taste. You dredge the shrimp in flour. This is a sort of New York scampi style. And I mean really dredge it. Don't dip it. Don't dip it like somebody who writes for one of these fruity websites. You dredge it like Fat Al's tuna, like a man with hair on his palms, on the back of his hands. A heavy hand, in other words. Don't make it like one of these effete snob chefs in San Francisco who gives you minimalist cuisine and charges you $93. Heavy-handed in the flour. Dip, 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 heavy, heavy, heavy. You got the oil crackling there, the soybean oil, but not olive oil. Remember, soy oil, not smoking but crackling. Now you drop them in, you put them in with a tongue. And don't crowd the shrimp. Give them plenty of room to cook. I put in like 6 to 7. And you let them cook. That's the big deal. You turn them over after 3 minutes, cook them another 3 minutes. If they still don't look right, you turn them on their sides so that the center gets cooked. And you could keep turning them. I kept turning them so they became somewhat crispy. Now you got the sauce being heated in a separate pan. And the king of the whole dish is the pasta, which is cooking in another pot. And before long, you're eating like a king. You understand that? And that's it. The trick that I'm trying to tell you is, A, use soybean oil for basically pan frying the shrimp, and B, dredge them in flour. Try it. That's all. If you don't like it, don't eat it. That's all. Don't eat it. Send it to a local deli and let them sell it tomorrow in a tuna salad. Why am I talking about this? A, because I really don't want to get into politics yet. I really don't want to get into it. I'm not ready for the deviants to call. I'm not ready to fight with the Islamo-fascist scum from hell. I'm not ready for the perverts and deviants. I'm not ready for the left-wing lunatics. They are a tiny minority, the groups I just mentioned to you. They account for 0.1% of the population, and they run the country now. Every politician's afraid of the homosexual, the Islamo-fascist, and the MoveOn.org perverts. I'm sick of it. It's my country, damn it, not theirs. And they can all drop dead. How's that? How's that for a hangover start? You can all drop dead. You're less than 0.1% of the population. But you've got these cowardly politicians in the palm of your hand. And now you're working on talk radio. You know what? I got my left hand over my right hand for you. I'll be back.
Borders, language, culture, there. Savage nations on the air. Run, 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 Rondado chick.
He's all on the air.
Run, run, Rondado, Rondado.
He has a quiet of.
Run, run, Rondado, Rondado.
Michael's always there.
Larry Chance and the Earls have created this bumper dedicated to the Savage Nation. These are the guys from the 50s, and thanks, guys. Tomorrow we'll feature the entire thing. It's from... You can hear it now on michaelsavage.com. We linked it up from YouTube. It's really great. What I want to play for you now is Dog the Bounty Hunter's racist rant. Now, he was talking to his son, who was apparently dating a black girl. Listen to this.
I'm not taking a chance on some out here. She's a Mexican. whatever. It's not because she's black. It's because we use the word sometimes here. I'm not going to take a chance ever in life of losing everything I've worked for 30 years because some heard us say and turned us into the Enquirer magazine. Our career is over. I'm not taking that chance at all. Never in life. It's not that they're black. It's none of that. It's that we use the word. We don't mean you without a soul. We don't mean that. But America would think we mean that. And we're not taking a chance on losing everything we got over a racial slur. Because our son goes with the girl like that. So I'll help you get another job, but you cannot work here unless you break up with her. And she's out of your life. I can't handle that. The girl said she's going to wear a...
Oh, she didn't.
Your girl was going to jump Beth one day.
No, she wasn't even there that day. You can ask any of them. She
I asked everybody.
There.
I asked everybody.
Ask them all again. Lisa's a lying...
Liar. Lisa said that Beth had a shirt on, and your girlfriend was going to...
She wasn't even there that day. The day Lisa said that happened, Monique wasn't even there. The last time Monique was anywhere near that office was during the cruise. And that was over a month and a half ago, Dad.
That's when it was, Tucker. So listen. So she says that she's going to whip Beth, and she goes, no, let's stick to the original plan that and record her.
That is so... No, Dad. Monique loves me to... That's
all right. Now, hold on a minute. This is a guy you never heard of. He has a show that I don't know who watches it, truthfully. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing because it's false bravado. You know what I'm saying? The real guys who do the real job are the police. And this guy is a, how shall I put it? I don't know. It just doesn't strike me as very real to go after busted down suitcases like that with the, let's suit up and they're right over and they're. Get a guy who's jumped bail, a poor junkie laying around somewhere in a house. Someone who skipped bail. Then they give him the whole Jesus story, like, I love you, brother. Yeah, come on. I don't know who watches it, but all right, there's room for everyone in this world. So now the guy, Dwayne Dog Chapman, has a success, and he's telling his son, "Don't you got to drop the black girl. You can't be on my show anymore," which is amazing to me. You know, we could talk about that or how to cook shrimp or hangovers.
Savage.
If you hang with that black girl, I do not want you in my house because it's already been proven that you run your mouth to her. That's it right there. So you just let me know. I got to go. What you're going to later, bye.
So most of you don't watch the show. I don't know who it's aimed at, but it's a guy who has a show called The Bounty Hunter or Dog the Bounty Hunter on A&E. And, you know, he puts on the big show that he's a big, brave guy. And I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's a tough guy. But, I don't know, picking on these poor, bedraggled people doesn't look too tough to me. I'm sure there are bounty hunters who really, you know, go after the real McCoy and there's no cameras with them. But anyway, that's not the story. The story is he had a private conversation with his son who's dating a black girl and he says, you got to drop her as a girlfriend because blah, 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 blah. We use the N-word around here, and I don't want it to destroy my... So now it was recorded, and the National Enquirer now releases it, and the National Enquirer says it doesn't matter how we got it. What matters is what Chapman said. Now, I got to ask you something. What kind of world are we living in that private conversations on the telephone can be recorded, and who's doing this? Who's doing this kind of thing? Is this the world you thought you'd live in the United States of America? That's one question. Number two, what would you pay to hear Al Sharpton's private phone conversations when talking about Jews or whites? And what would you pay to hear Congressman Ellison's conversations when talking about Jews or Christians? 1-800-449-8255. Bud, Kansas City, Missouri. What's on your mind, please?
How you doing?
Good.
I just had to call about this Dwayne Dog Chapman. I watch his show. I'm a bounty hunter. I've been a bounty hunter for 16 years. I'm a member of the National Association of Bail Enforcement Agents, run by Bob Burton.
Right.
And my take on him is he's a joke. I mean, the stuff he does
I'm not in that world, but I think there are a lot more hardened criminals that you guys have to get than poor bedraggled pickpockets and junkies.
You're right. You're right. The only thing you got to remember, though, is in order to get the big bonds, you have to take the little bonds. You know.
No, I understand all of that, but the cases that they show on that program usually are harmless individuals who don't look like they could even fight back. I guess that's what I'm saying.
Right, right, right. But he takes a whole gang. I do this with my wife. I'm 66 years old. My wife is 69 years old. She takes the back door. I don't need a crew.
See, you're the face of America that the enemy has never seen, bud.
Right, right.
And you're the hidden face of America. You could probably do a pretty good job on some of these characters. But, bud, when you bounty hunters go out, you do go after murderers occasionally, don't you?
We go after anything the bondsman sends us after. Drug dealers, doesn't matter. You know, if it's a traffic ticket, I'll go get them because that's what the bondsman wants.
I understand that. But in the real world of bounty hunting, wouldn't you think that a show like this should show the Chapman and his gang with a let's suit up, with like they're going on a mission, a bombing mission over Schweinfurt, Germany? Well, and they usually find a junkie hiding underneath a mattress somewhere.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And let me ask you, and when you catch the guy, do you sit in the car and talk to him about Jesus?
No, I don't.
Well, what's that all about? What's that all about on this show? What does he give him the whole Bible talk for? Like, I'm with you, brother, you deserve a second chance? What hokum?
Yeah, like I say, it's all hype. I hand it to him for one thing. He's an ex-convict to come out. He was able to do something to make some money and pull the wool over people's eyes and make the money. And he's made good money. He knew when he went to Mexico he was breaking the law. But he went down there.
No, I agree. You got to hand it to the guy. He's a good showman. You know, he's the man overcame a homicide rap and got out of jail. Look, he made a lot out of his life. So that's not the point. You know, it's not even about the show. It's about, let me ask you this as a bounty hunter. Is it legal to record someone's phone conversation? I understand it varies state by state, bud. But in your business, you would know something about that. How do you record someone's phone conversation from a distance, let's say? How do you do that?
Oh, that's simple to do. I would never do it. I never have done it. The state of Missouri allows you to record any conversation, phone or whatever, that you're a part of.
That you're a part of. Well, whoever did this to Dog Chapman was not a part of that conversation. Somebody got the phone call, though, captured it, and sent it to the National Enquirer. So there are devices that will pick up phone calls, right? I mean, you could be 20, 30 yards away with a listening device and pick it up out of a house?
I've never seen anything that you can do that with. I'm sure there is.
All right, well, we're going to get some experts on, bud. Hope you don't come looking for me one day. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. We could talk about this, the shrimp scampi. The war is going to go on for 50 more years. The gentleman who flew the Enola Gay, Paul Tibbetts, died at 92. He finished World War Japan. He gave him the two knockout punches. The only thing about it is I wish they had called it the Enola Straight. They always have to work the word gay into every topic. But all right, I know he named it. It was his mother's name. She couldn't be named Enola Straight. But all right, let's put that aside. He lived to 92. He said he wasn't happy about the fact that he incinerated 80,000 people, but he did his mission. You know, 1-800-449-8255, Portland, Maine. Marshall, go ahead, please. Topic, what's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. It's an honor to speak to you. I think the girlfriend might have leaked the story.
That is a good theory. But how would she have heard? You mean she was on the other line recording?
Well, you know, if he did send it to his son, it's always a possibility, you know. Maybe the guy was...
Well, what's interesting here is Chapman is telling his son that he doesn't trust her and that they use the N-word, and this girl apparently has, he said, threatened his own wife, you know. And it sounds like she was troubled from the get-go. Well, it turned out exactly he was right in a way. His instincts were correct in this case, it looks like.
Yeah.
So in other words, his statements are racist. There's no question about that. But there's a bigger issue than his private racist statements. The issue is, how about his privacy? That's all. 1-800-4-4. I think people rather talk about shrimp scampi than this. What else do I have for you here that's of any interest to you? Is there any interest to you with any of this? The pagan holidays added to excused absences. Isn't that wonderful? Oh, I want to give you a quick story on Hollywood's Judases. there's many of them, so I can't say there's a Judas in Hollywood. I would say that there are many Judases in Hollywood. I'd call them Judasses, but I wouldn't think you'd get it. The biggest Judas today is Robert Redford. That schmuck has the nerve to say, Robert Redford, quote, "We've lost our sacred freedoms." Now, the fact that rotten anti-Iraq movies are put out and released in this country proves the exact opposite. Our sacred freedoms are intact. Our right to dissent without fear of retribution is alive and well in this country. For Robert Redford, the Judas, the typical red diaper dopa baby liberal, who has exploited every freedom that this country has to offer, and then whines about how those freedoms are in jeopardy, to me, is what makes him the Hollywood Judas of the day. David, could you play that soundbite? And now we have the Hollywood idiot of the day. Well, I didn't answer it, but...
And now, the Savage Nation Hollywood idiot of the day.
Answer all of them. There is no one idiot. It's a town of pinheads. But the question is, how could this man Redford say that we've lost our sacred freedoms? You notice the libs, they run around, "Oh, we've lost our freedoms under George Bush. We've lost our sacred freedoms." Flying around in their private jets, putting down the country, putting down the troops, putting down the war, and they say we've lost our freedom. They lost their freedoms. They'd be in a slave labor camp, like in North Korea, these frauds, these Judasses. Bakersfield, California. Nathan, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hi there, Dr. Savage. I wanted to talk about the dog situation.
Yes, sir.
I think what's going on is, I think Dog is just trying to defend his family. I don't believe that his speech was accurate as it should be, maybe politically correct, but as far as the privacy is concerned, I wonder if it might be by chance that it was his son that actually turned him in, because if you listen into the clip, he speaks about the Inquirer.
Isn't that something? Well, that would reverse the Abraham and Isaac story. It's almost biblical if that is true. If that turns out to be true, that the son was trying to get even with his overbearing father who's threatening him to leave his girlfriend, and then he shows him, that would be terrible. I mean, that would be a horrible thing if that's true. Whoa, you know? Akron, Ohio. John, what do you think?
Mike, I think the guy took the wind out of my sails because I think the kid turned him in. First thing I heard when my alarm clock went off this morning, you were talking about that story, I said that his SOB son turned him in. That's more offensive. You know, everyone's heard the N-word. What's more offensive is your own son turned you in and for a few bucks for the National Enquirer to get back at your dad. Tried to destroy his career. Probably did.
I don't know. We really don't know. But people can click on michaelsavage.com and listen to this tape for themselves. I don't know who did it. I want to know if it's legal to do this, to record people's conversations. What kind of people would do this, you know, sit around waiting for you to say something and then broadcast it? We're living in a terrible, terrible time in America, and the politicians are fiddling while Rome burns. That's why they're in such low rating, have such low ratings. We know that they're fiddling while Rome burns. That's really what it comes down to. WOR, New York. Joey, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. Two quick topics, and I'll let you discuss them for me. Number one, I have a daughter in third grade. She goes to school. She goes to school on Columbus Day. She comes back. She knows nothing about America, who discovered America, the Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, all the things, all the great stuff I used to learn in grammar school, number one. Number two, put your shrimp scampi. Where is...
Yes.
Like the garlic, the parsley, the basil.
Oh, absolutely. I left all of that stuff out. The important point, I got Italian parsley last night and I chopped it on the cutting board. I had it ready to go, you know, after it was done. It's all in there. But mostly I wanted to tell people how to cook the shrimp by dredging it in flour and using soy oil, which is an unknown phenomenon throughout most of America. Most people will just simply use olive oil. And the oil catches smoky right away. They can't even get the heat up to the level it needs to be up to, nor can they keep the shrimp in there long enough. So I wanted them to know to use a good soy oil that's not hydrogenated.
But the Columbus Day, Michael, what are we going to do? How can these kids...
No, it's heartbreaking. You know, I thought about it, Joey. It's funny you should mention it. I bicycle around my neighborhood, and one of the places I bicycle past is an elementary school, and I look in the room sometimes as I go by, and I say, what the heck are they putting in these kids' heads? What are they inculcating them with? They're like brainwashing sessions. You don't see an American flag. Every holiday they take is a pagan holiday or an anti-American holiday of one kind or another. Every other day the children are out and not in school. I don't know what they're teaching them anymore, Joey. I think it's primarily left-wing propaganda. You know? What you have to do, Joey, is you have to augment it at home. It's a hard job. I'm glad I don't have a young kid today. I'm very glad because the perverts and the leftists have taken over the educational system, and the children are being brainwashed. Thank you for the call. I'm glad I'm past that age bracket. You know, I don't know what's going on with the West. We're sitting here quaking in our boots. Here's a headline that I put up on my website about Israel, for example. Remember once gutsy Israel when it was run by a woman, Golda Meir? Now it's like a sad sack nation. They have the most potent military in the Middle East, and they're afraid to use it. They also send their young sons in to get killed and shot in the face instead of blasting the enemy into Allah land with an F-16. So my headline says, Israel is sitting duck, afraid to act, fears upsetting national suicide plan put forth by Bush and Condi Rice. And what I'm referring to is an article that came out about the fact that the Palestinians are using the Gaza Strip, which Israel gave back to them, a year or two ago, which I said, don't do. They're shooting rockets into Israel on a regular basis from the very lands that they returned to these murderers. Now, I told them they're not going to get peace through weakness. They're only going to get peace through strength. And a lot of you call me and argue, they don't want. Do you know that Condoleezza Rice is telling the Jews to leave the West Bank, so-called, and to give yet another arm to the murderers who would kill their children and cut their throats? There's never going to be peace in the Middle East if you're going to capitulate to the bloodthirsty murderers who've been brainwashed since the nursery to kill the Jew. Let me tell you something. There's only one thing they understand, and that is the warrior mentality. And I'm sad to tell you, it doesn't seem to be there anymore. The Israelis have become soft, like the majority of people in this country, unwilling to fight for their own life, let alone their own land. They don't believe in anything. They believe in a Bloomingdale's charge card in Zurich or in New York, it seems to me. It doesn't mean there aren't the occasional brave men. Of course there are. But the country as a whole has fallen apart, and it was destroyed by one man from Berkeley, California. A certain left-wing fraudulent rabbi, the type the Bible wrote about, that the ancients knew about, who used to consult for Hillary Clinton, went over there and created a group called Peace Now. He did this 20 years ago. This left-wing rabbi destroyed the morale of the entire nation of Israel. And that's what the problem is with weakness. Weakness breeds more weakness. It's a virus. I don't have a solution for it. It's just horrible for me to watch this. I saw a documentary two nights ago that was, strangely enough, on public broadcasting, showing the Israeli police forcibly removing the religious Jewish settlers from the Gaza Strip whenever it was done 2 years ago, 04, 05, I don't remember anymore. I can't recall. The time is just speeding by. And it showed the religious Jews praying as they were being forcibly removed. It was Jew against Jew. And the police, some of them were almost in tears because they knew what they were doing was evil. They had become the enemy themselves. They were following the orders of George Bush. Remember when this happened? It happened when the New World Order finally had their president in the White House long enough to bamboozle the people. And so that shameful president, General Ariel Sharon, who lost it all when he became the prime minister of Israel, he was a great general and the worst prime minister in the history of Israel because he fell faster than all of them and became a puppet of the Bush administration. So anyway, I saw this documentary of the Jews being pulled out of their houses, and then after they were thrown out and bust out of there, out of the Gaza Strip, the Israelis brought in tanks and cranes and ripped down all the houses they built over 20 years and destroyed them. Now, I couldn't believe what I was watching. Sharon gave back the Gaza Strip in the name of peace. That's what he was told by George Bush. And what he got was rockets instead of peace. Now, Bush and Rice want Israel to give back the entire so-called West Bank, which is a fiction, by the way. There is no West Bank. Palestine is in the east bank of the Jordan River, by the way. It's called Jordan. I'll be right back.
Savage.
far-left New York Times magazine over the weekend ran a headline story, End Times for Evangelicals, question mark. And they're claiming that the evangelical movement is dead politically. Now, I ask you, do you believe that that's true? And if so, why? They say that they don't have a natural presidential candidate. They don't have a unified leadership. They no longer seem to share even the same political beliefs. I believe it's all nonsense. I believe the left is way overrating its power. I know they are. They own the media, but they don't own the people. And, you know, you could see this in, for example, when some of these left-wing groups put out books, they sell very few copies. This has happened several times now, where these greatly over-exaggerated left-wing blog groups that the Democrats are beholden to try to sell an item. They sell very few thousand copies usually. Now, one of them just sold a few hundred. And yet the Democrat Party caters to them as though they are the majority of the American people. I believe that the opposite is true. And I don't think the evangelical movement is dead. I just think that they're looking for a leader right now. That doesn't mean the movement's dead. And the problem is none of the Republican candidates can pick up that mantle. Now, you can talk about that if you want. It's an interesting question. Let's take a few callers, though, on the topics that are up there. Florida Lily, welcome to the Savage Nation. Are you there or gone?
Hi, Lily. Mike. I love you. I listen to you every day. I thank you for what you do for the children, about Prozac and Ritalin, identifying the enemies of our children and our country with the drugs they give them. But, Michael, please, I'm asking for your help. I was crying last night because you are the only one that can help us. And you trash all of the candidates. You trash George Bush and the Republicans. Where will we go, Michael? You're making it easier for Hillary to win.
Well, you're wrong about that. I'm not going to sit here and support a fraud like George Bush. He busted our borders. He's destroying our language. And he's done nothing for our culture. What am I supposed to do? Worship him?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Percent of Americans disapprove of how Congress is handling its job, according to the latest CNN public opinion research poll. Why? Let them count the ways. Because Congress is out of touch. Because Congress has not taken action on issues important to them. Because there's too much fighting, etc. If you are struggling to pay bills, keep a job, find health care, live in the real world, Congress is Nero, fiddling while Rome burns.
Volare.
E cantare. Welcome to the Savage Nation. All you can do is cook shrimp scampi while Rome burns, that's all. And tell the truth, and let those who don't like it be damned. Welcome. That's all. You're going to let the she-males control what you think? No, I'm not going to do it. Will you play the Volare? What did you cut it off for? Just when I was in June. I love the way he throws those syllables around. Musica, blah, 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 blah. One more refrain.
Volare. Oh, oh.
Wonder when he does the Italian, then I'll let it go.
E cantare.
I love that cantare. You would say cantare.
Oh, oh, oh. No wonder my happy heart's.
He was a barber. Barber, look where he went. He had talent in him. You don't know what's in a man till you give him a chance. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about various things and how the smallest minority in American history has taken control of Congress, while the rest of us are left out here to dry. You've got the Islamo-fascists with their front groups like CAIR. You've got the homosexual fascists with their front groups funded by Hillary's friends like Media Matters. It's a fascist homosexual website. Everyone knows that. And they are. She proudly says she created Media Matters. That guy who runs it is a homosexual. He's a fascist, in my opinion. And he basically is a stooge of Hillary Clinton trying to silence her opponents or anybody who disagrees with her. This is the nation you want to live in? Where thugs like that smear people? You must be kidding me. And yet, what, 0.1% of this country is composed of radical homosexuals like that and Islamists like those who are in CAIR and the radical illegal alien crowd who want to take over this country and force you to do things that you know are illegal? They, though, have the power to control your Congress. That's the sad truth today on the Savage Nation. Don't call me about it. What can you do about it but learn how to cook shrimp scampi? KNEW, San Francisco. Susan, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I want to thank you so much because 2 weeks ago you were feeling so down. You said, I'm just not making a difference. You know, it's just going nowhere. Well, I'm telling you, you made a huge difference in my husband. My husband's an orthodontist, a New York Jewish liberal, way left liberal guy from New York. Washington Heights, whatever. And for years, we've had a relationship like James Carville and Mary Madeline. I mean, for him, the New York Times is the gospel. It could say one thing, and the guy that the New York Times quoted in error would be on television saying the exact opposite. He would still take the New York Times. He's so
amazing. So he was a dyed-in-the-wool red diaper dopa baby, but you loved him anyway. And what happened?
But what happened is one day we were driving, and I listened to you. In fact, I marched with you in 97 on that immigration thing. But so I said, Jerry, just listen to Michael Savage, please, because he doesn't like Riley, he doesn't like O'Reilly, he doesn't like Hannah, he doesn't like anybody else. So I put you on. And he related to you. It is a true miracle. I am telling you this. He related to you being from New York and all the stuff you talk about and the way he just...
Well, he may relate to me, but politically, did he have a slight awakening?
He did. I swear to God, this is a miracle. You have no idea. He's like James Carville, and we're like Mary Madeline. We can't even talk politics at all.
But I'm saying now he's agreeing with you slightly on some issues?
You know, he has seen this whole thing, you know, like...
Wait, let me put it another way. You may be naive here. I don't want to ask personal details, but I will. I'm going to, in a nice way, I'm going to ask. What age? Are you in the 50 to 60 bracket?
60. Well, I'm in the early 60s. He's 69.
All right, and I would assume that the years of intimacy are behind you?
The years of intimacy?
Yes, I mean that closeness, the bedroom stuff.
No.
No, but not like it was, obviously, right?
Well, things change, right? But
all right. You know, now, is it possible that your husband visited a urologist and got a prescription for Viagra?
No.
I mean, that could explain his change of behavior, too, you know, Susan. You never know. Guys are very devious.
No, he just really likes you.
I mean, like Lenny Bruce said many years ago, when a guy is in that state of mind, he'll do it with mud. Thanks for the call. 1-800-441. I'm not trying to insult the woman, but he hasn't changed. He wants something from her. That's all. That's my intuition is your orthodontist from Washington Heights is looking for something, honey, and it isn't your political viewpoint. That's all. Let me read you an email here. Dear Michael Savage, this comes from a wonderful author named Dr. Ann Hendershot. And I on my replay yesterday, I did a piece on deviancy and how you've been hoodwinked into accepting deviancy as the norm and how you, the norms, have been turned into the deviants by the perverts. So the author emailed me and said, Michael Savage, I was listening to one of your encore presentations and was so honored to hear you talk about deviance in my book. You are the only radio host with the courage to actually endorse the book so strongly. And thank you also for all you have done for Colonel Chesani. I have already donated to the Thomas More Society. My husband and I are especially grateful to you for all you do for the soldiers. Our son Jonathan graduated from West Point in May and will be deploying to Iraq in January or February. I worry about him, but we appreciate all you do to support the troops and make them feel valued. Thank you again. I don't know what I would do without you. I listen every night. I love the Teddy stories. Hope he has recovered from his fall into the bay. What a cute little guy. I have two Shih Tzus, Shih Tzus, and a boxer, so I feel like I know Teddy. It comes from Ann Hendershot. It's a very nice email. I suspect that I would think every thinking person in America listening to this show on a fairly regular basis. That's my guess. Let me tell you why. It's not because – I'll tell you why. I don't have to give you a disclaimer. I'll tell you why. A lot of people don't know which way to turn anymore to seeing which way the wind blows. They don't know which way the American people are going. They don't have really strong opinions themselves. People are in doubt and they're perplexed about their own viewpoints. They want to know if maybe they were wrong. I mean, both sides, they don't know what to think anymore. The country and the world are like shifting sands underneath most of our feet. So, like, they listen to me, not so much because they want to listen to what I say to agree with me, but to hear what a man such as myself is saying, because they know that I'm fairly consistent in my beliefs and my viewpoints. And they figure with a man with as strong opinions as I have, well, at least they'll take a shot at listening to him to see what this guy thinks about various things. Plus, it's entertaining, you know, and it's homey. They may learn how to cook shrimp, which you didn't really learn when you went to St. Ignatius. I mean, but the fact is, there's a lot of things that you can enjoy on the Savage Nation. But I'm pretty sure that, well, another way to look at it is this. If I were not on the radio, I'd look for a show like mine to listen to, and there is none. This is a one-off. It's not that there aren't other good shows. There are other good shows. But mine is an original show, and it's very unique. And there's nothing like it. There never has been anything like it. There never will be anything like it, ever. I got another email I got to tell you about. It's very important. I forget the gentleman. He's from Africa. He loves the show. All he kept talking about was the fact that he listens to me. He didn't even know what his politics were when he came here from Africa. He said, but he loves Michael Savage because this guy tells the truth. He says it the way he sees it. And he went on and on and on. I was thinking deeply about it, and I realized something. A lot of the people who come here from third world countries, the legal immigrants, are actually the best and the brightest of their countries without the opportunities that the rich ones had. They have the daring to leave their country and try to better themselves, the legal immigrants. And consequently, they love to hear someone who actually is speaking the way Americans used to speak, which is speaking their mind. How often do you hear people speaking their mind in Congress? Not too often. And how often do you hear people speaking their mind in the media? Almost never. And how often do you hear people speaking their mind anymore anywhere in public? Almost never. And unless we become a free nation again, where free speech truly reigns, this country is doomed. We cannot let fascist Islamic groups like CAIR or fascist homosexual groups such as Media Matters or any of the other far-left groups dictate to us what we can and cannot say, what we can and cannot think. We can't permit them to seize this democracy. They will destroy it. I'll be right back. Is the Savage Nation, and you know the phone number. You know the phone number, and you know the website, so I'm not going to repeat it. The website's, what is the website? MichaelSavage.com. Let us go to the callers, because the callers know everything. The callers know everything. I can't read my screen is the problem. The thing is off here on the right. I can't read what the callers are saying. Andy on WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael. The untold yes. story here is that the Democrat Party, honestly and truly, wants the Clintons to go away permanently. And don't be surprised if there's a feeding frenzy right now. Look, when Bill Clinton took the White House 2 years after the Republicans came in and swept the Democrats out, the Democrats don't want to relive that again. They took power in Congress right now, and they know that Hillary will lose Congress for them if she gets elected.
Wait. Hold it. For a minute. What you say is true up to a point. However, Nancy Pelosi is also extremely unpopular. How do you explain that?
How do I explain? Well, I think that the Democrats, in general, will refuse for some reason. It is a mental disorder. Liberalism is a mental disorder, and they refuse to listen to the general public. Look, Michael, you know this. Your listeners know this.
Do you know that as we're talking, Andy, a global warming bill is advancing in the Senate, which is blaming the wildfires in California on global warming, even though fire bugs have been caught, one shot, one killed, one arrested? Do you know that they're blaming it on global warming anyway? Do you realize how idiotic this is?
I do. I do. Look, you know this, and I know it, and most of the people are educated know this. The bottom line is that ultimately, at the end of the day, the issue that you brought up, and you know this, the issue that will save us is illegal immigration. And the fact that they keep ignoring this will ultimately... Yeah.
I agree. 72% of Democrats want the illegal immigrants thrown out of the country. They don't want them here. You see, what's interesting is that the Democrats, the poorer ones, the old Democrats, they're impacted more by the illegal immigrants than you would imagine. They're running into them everywhere they turn. They're running into them at the Motor Vehicle Bureau. They're running into them at the Social Security line. They're running into them at the clinics they go to. Wherever they turn, they see illegal aliens speaking Spanish and getting freebies, and they know it's coming out of their pocketbook.
You understand the pulse of America more than anyone. You are exactly right. Last night I went to a Democrat event. I know of a local guy in town who I'm supporting for mayor, and although I'm conservative, he's a great guy. But in any event, it was amazing to me that all the rank-and-file Democrats that were there, especially the older people like you talked about, cannot stand Hillary Clinton. Cannot stand
her. All right, well, why don't they like Hillary? Is it because they know that she comes with a lot of baggage from Arkansas? They remember those years?
No, not really. I think it's less, I don't think they think about it that deeply. I just think that they see right through her. They don't like the fact that she tries to play it both ways, where she wants to be the victim, the woman who gets picked on all the time, but at the same time she wants to play with the boys. And you can't have it both ways.
Well, look, it's a given fact that America is not Europe, and women don't like women to the extent that they do in other countries. They don't get along with each other very well here. They really don't, despite the lies about sisterhood and all of that. Women don't want a woman president. I'm pretty sure she's not going to win. It's Giuliani's to lose. If he'd stop fence-sitting and he'd become a real conservative instead of a social butterfly, liberal social butterfly, he could win this presidency quite handsomely. He'd win by 10 points at the very least. The problem with Giuliani is he's flip-flopping on critical issues to the voters, and they're going to stay home in droves unless he stops it.
I think he'll get his act together, and when he does get the opportunity and the chance to debate with her head-to-head, if that's when it happens, he can connect much more.
No, he can only connect if he comes to this show. And I'm telling you right now, he won't talk to you. He won't talk to the 20 million people, 24 million people who've gone on my website and said, Mike, leave radio and run for the office. We know you may not win, but you'll give him hell, Harry. If he will not meet the hardcore conservative audience of this show, he's not winning. It's impossible. They're not going to vote for him. They're not going to vote for him. I'm telling you, they'll sit it out.
Again, Michael, you understand the pulse better than everyone. You're exactly right.
But look who his campaign manager is. His campaign manager is an ex-bartender, an uneducated, illiterate thug. Now, how in the world can this man, who's sophisticated, connect with America when he uses an ex-bartender? I have nothing against bartenders, but they really don't know America as well as I do. How can they ignore you and 22 million people and expect Giuliani to win?
Michael, they better not. They better not, and you know
what?
No, but
what I'm saying to you here is something different in a way. Giuliani's as disconnected from the world as is Hillary. He's not the savior that he pretends to be. Giuliani is out for Giuliani. Giuliani is a self-serving individual, as most Americans are, and he's trying on many issues to straddle the fence, and it is not playing out across America. It may work in New York. It is not working west of the Hudson River. And the fact of the matter is all these polls are meaningless thus far. Most Americans are not involved in this campaign to any extent whatsoever. They could care less who's running. That's my opinion. Thanks for the call. We could talk about other things on the Savage Nation other than, please, let's not talk about the campaign. Nobody's interested in it except the professional politicians in the media and the talkers in the media and the politicians. And that's it. I could see that Sharpton and Jackson did Imus a favor. They got him a raise. Look at this. They got him a huge pay raise. Thank you, Al. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We got so many great topics. Let's go to, I don't know, Shane. I don't know where that is. Wyoming? Oh, Cheyenne, Wyoming. Of course. Will, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Sure. I'm here to tell you why Giuliani can't beat Hillary, and I'm an ultra-conservative. We conservatives are tired of being counted on by the neocons to vote against a socialist liberal rather than give us a true conservative to vote for. I personally know of no conservative who is... happy with Mr. Giuliani, and we.
I said that he doesn't listen to anybody. He's listening to his own circle of advisors, who have been with him while he was the mayor of New York and running his very successful security company. But west of the Hudson River, he is not trusted by the conservative base. I take it you're not going to go out. Let's say if it was Hillary versus him, would you say, well, I'll vote for him anyway, or would you stay home?
I will not vote for the lesser of two evils. No, sir.
I agree with you. That's what I'm trying to say to them. I've been saying that over and over and over. By voting for the lesser of two evils, you still get evil.
Telling me today what he's going to do tomorrow, I look at what he did yesterday. And when he did there and he said no to guns and he was a social liberal, I won't vote for that.
He pandered to the radical homosexual. Let's be clear. He's in favor of homosexual marriage. He's probably a gun grabber. He'll go along with the Brady Bunch. Where he stands on other issues is very hard to tell. There are a few issues that he is strong on. However, even on those issues, he has modified his statements in order to sound like a middle of the roader. We can't afford that right now. The times, they are changing, and they're very, very demanding right now. We need a very clear picture of who we're going to elect. We can't have a waffler running for office pretending to be a conservative.
Michael, are you still there?
Yeah, thanks for the call. But I'd rather not talk about that. I really don't want to talk about the campaign. It's so far away, you know. It's so far away. Sherry in Los Angeles, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. Real quick, I just want you to know I voted for Bush twice, and I'm very angry at him. He's made deals with other countries against our own constitution. And if we didn't have boots on the ground, I would request something very severe. Let me just put it that way. But I'm very.
What do you mean? Wait. If we didn't have boots on the ground, where? Oh, you mean you'd request? What do you mean by request? You'd call for impeachment?
Oh, I don't want to say it. Yes, I would. And I'm a conservative, and what he did with Fox, Vicente Fox, as he stated on Larry King, that he made a deal with him and with the prime minister.
Well, I could go down the litany of things he's done wrong. I wish there would be a Bush supporter who would call and tell us what he's done right. I think that would be more interesting, and I thank you for the call. Maybe Rush Limbaugh will call the show and tell us what Bush has done right. Gil on WOR, welcome to the program.
Yes, three quick points. Number one on alcohol. The alcohol is a cheap, over-the-counter, non-prescription antidepressant and tranquilizer. The fact that you get headaches from the wine is because of incomplete fermentation process. It's too quickly fermented. Also, some wines can take...
But hold on. Slow down, Gil. I disagree with you. It's because of the congeners in wine that don't exist in vodka.
And also glycol, which sweetens...
Wait. Gil, are you hearing anything, or you just called to read something from an encyclopedia?
This is in my brain.
Gil, are you listening? Can we have a conversation, or is it a one-way street?
Okay, go ahead.
I don't get hangovers from beer. I don't get hangovers from wine, from a vodka. I get hangovers from wine. It's primarily because of the sulfite content and also because of the congeners in wine, particularly red wine. Are you aware of what congeners are?
Yes, I am.
All right, so we can't disagree on that.
No, we don't.
All right, thank you. You're an intelligent man, but, you know, the reason vodka is so popular is because there are zero congeners in the new breeds of vodkas, like Sky Vodka, which my friend Maurice created. And the fact of the matter is, he was the first to purify the vodka in that way. You look at something such as scotch, it's filled with congeners, which gives it its flavor. But the congeners are chemical byproducts of the process of making that drink. That give you the hangover. Now, in wine, unfortunately, it's because of the amount of sulfites that are added to the wine. There's only one nation I know that does not add sulfites to the wine to any extent, and that's New Zealand, which is why their white wines never give me a hangover. I can have a glass or two of their the Marlborough County wines. I never get a hangover. Unfortunately, even the French wines today are playing around with the sulfites. And I know that sulfites occur naturally in grape skins. That I'm totally aware of that. But it's when they add sulfites to the final mixture that you wind up with the headaches. But you know, all right, everyone has their. It's a big deal in life, is it? Not a big deal. The answer is don't drink. That's all. Don't drink. And it's not a mild antidepressant at all. Wine has a totally different effect than antidepressant. I would put it in another direction than antidepressant, because not everything is based upon fighting depression. You know, in other words, therapeutically, we're not all walking around depressed looking for relief from depression. I would not call dealing with the vicissitudes of life dealing with depression. See, they've medicalized life itself. The gangsters who own the drug companies have medicalized virtually every aspect of living. They've turned childbirth into a disease. They've turned childhood into a disease. They've turned everything in life into an illness, which they then medicate. That's not the way to look at things. It's an upside-down way to look at things. So that's all. I don't know what else you want to talk about here. Is there any news out there? There was another news story that I saw. I already told you that our first Muslim congressman, Ellison, wants to ban the photo ID as a requirement for voting. Now, why would he be opposed to any kind of photo ID for voting other than he wants to engage in election fraud? Who does he want to vote that he's afraid of that they can't get a photo ID? I know he's couching it that it's a sort of poll tax and it discriminates against the poor and the black. It's a lie. It discriminates against the illegal alien who doesn't have a right to vote, Ellison, and you know it. Pagan holidays added to excused absences at Marshall University. There's a law of the sea treaty that has been passed. It's a nightmare. It's a sort of Kyoto Protocol of the seas. It's too complicated for me to explain. You'll hear more about it on this and other shows. The law of the sea treaty is heading for passage. It is destroying and decimating the U.S. Navy. George Bush is 100% for it. You hear? UN scientist rejects Nobel Prize share, denounces climate alarmism. Did you hear this one? Did it make it to your local paper? All you schmucks who read the New York Times and the San Francisco Chronicle like it's the gospel itself? You didn't read that there because the schmucks who run the papers don't want you to know the truth? They want to keep you sitting there like a little putz reading their paper? Well, read about it. The scientist who was awarded the Nobel Prize with the shyster of all shysters, Al Gorleoni, has rejected the Nobel Prize, his part of it. He said, I don't want it because it's climate alarmism. Did you hear me? Al Gore is a liar. UN scientist rejects Nobel Prize share, denounces climate alarmism. I linked it up on michaelsavage.com. That's right. John Christie, in today's Wall Street Journal, Dr. Christie tells the world that not only does he believe it's unproven that humans cause global warming, he's refusing his share of the Nobel Peace Prize that he was awarded because it was based on a misunderstanding of science. Can you believe this? Can you believe that you haven't read this? That's the point. It's not that another scientist, added to the list of thousands who know that global warming is a hoax, but that you haven't read about this in your local propaganda sheet, whether it be called the New York Times, the LA Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, or any of the other failing newspapers that are falling deeper and deeper into debt. This man has said, I've had a lot of fun recently with my tiny slice of the 07 Nobel Peace Prize awarded to the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. But though I was one of thousands of IPCC participants, I don't think I will add Nobel laureate to my resume. The other half of the prize was awarded to former VP Al Gore, whose carbon footprint would stomp my neighborhood flat. But that's another story. Large icebergs in the Weddell Sea, Antarctica. Winter sea ice around the continent set a record maximum last month. Did you hear this? I don't think you understand that. Winter sea ice around the continent of Antarctica set a record maximum last night. Yes, some of the ice is melting on the North Pole, but in the Antarctic, the South Pole that Al Gore doesn't look at, the winter sea ice has hit the highest maximum we've ever seen. And you don't hear about this. Not only ignoramuses, but they want to keep you ignorant. I don't understand how you people who call yourself liberals could want to know half the truth. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you dingbats that you only want to listen to one half the story? I'm not asking you to agree with everything I say, but surely you'd want to hear from people who disagree with Al Gore, wouldn't you? What is wrong with you? Why do you want to I'm talking to myself, sorry. Liberalism is Mental Disorder. I forgot my own book title. That's all. And people who are mentally disordered must have propaganda to confirm their disbelief in all good things. Sarasota, Florida, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
The evangelical vote has been marginalized. Back in 2000 and 2004, the same people that marginalized liberals and voted this bomb, I mean President Bush in office, they're the people that are causing a lot of the problems in this country, and it's just karma biting them on the backside.
So you're saying in a way that George Bush destroyed the evangelical movement?
I believe so. Yes, I do, Michael.
Well, it's interesting. I wouldn't disagree with you. I think he's a great imposter. I believe that he's deceived virtually every bloc that supported him has been deceived by him in one way or another. I really don't know of one voting bloc who's happy with George Bush other than the Limbaugh crowd and O'Reilly and Hannity, who apparently are Bush bots. They're entitled to it. It's a big country. But I don't know this. Who's the voting bloc for George Bush today? Is there anybody out there who thinks he's doing a great job and why? I mean, I'll turn it around. I'm going to give you the floor. Can you please tell me what George Bush has done right and is doing right? There are a few things I know of. One is he voted against partial birth abortion. He vetoed that. He vetoed the child health bill because it was a scam by the Democrats to make him look mean-spirited, but it didn't work. We know that that would have further bankrupted the country. Right now we're in free fall. Our economy is not in great shape. It looks very good in certain sectors and in certain demographics. But by and large, the average person is scared to death at the economic situation of this country. The people who just bought houses a few years ago are frightened. People who have just managed to get their first toehold into the middle class are frightened. The very rich are very happy, and that's good. He's kept taxes low. That's a positive. I'm trying to think myself. He's kept taxes low. He vetoed partial birth abortion. I don't really know what else I could say that he did a good job on. I truly don't. To me, Clinton and Bush are the same. It's just window dressing, actually, at the end of the day. It's Clinton, Bush, Bush, Clinton, Clinton, Bush, Bush, Clinton. It's one. Look, I'm the one who coined the phrase Republicrat or Democrat. I did so in 94. It's one party system. We have an oligarchy running this country, and I don't mind that so long as they do something for the people. What's happened now is they're not doing anything that the people want. They're not doing the people's business. The number one issue is illegal immigration. Everybody is sick and tired of the illegal immigrants in this country. Even Democrats are fed up with the illegal immigrants in this country. They finally feel it. They understand that this is what Cato the Elder in ancient Rome was writing about. When he said that the average Roman is not really interested in what goes on in distant countries and what the legions are doing in this country and that country, they're interested, the Roman, he said, the average Roman was interested in the pebble in his shoe, meaning what is actually bothering him. And when you get liberal Democrats who have to press one for English to collect a Social Security check, or have to press one for English to get treatment at a local hospital, or have to press one for English when they go and get their child at school and they see it's been turned into a school out of Tijuana, particularly in California, when they see the grave, grave robbery of the hard-earned tax dollars in this country, and they know it's going to the illegal alien who's exporting it back to Mexico and other countries, and they see the crime, they're probably impacted by some of the drunk driving or some of the other crime, they're not buying the line that they all come here to work. And so the number one issue, which I have been articulating since 1994, which people have tried to say was wrong of me, for years I was called a racist because I said illegal immigration is going to destroy this country, it's going to break us in half. Right now, everything that I've told you is true. I've been prophetic on that issue, and I've been doing it since 1994. And the people who have tried to be my detractors are all wrong, and they're on the ashpit of history, as they will be on Islamofascism. I'm going through the same thing now with Islamofascism. They're trying to boycott me. They're trying to put me down, call me names that I'm not. I can guarantee you that just as I was right on the illegal immigration and on borders, language, and culture, the Islamofascist groups who are trying to get me off the air are going to be in the dustbin of history within a short, well, not short, in a medium amount of time. They're going to be found to be front groups for Hezbollah and Iran. I'll be right back. let's move on. I'm so bored of this topic of Bush and that and that. Maybe there's no news. I don't know. Let's go to vintage audio from General Paul Tibbetts, who piloted the Enola Gay, pardon me, the B-29 that dropped the atomic bomb over Hiroshima on August 6, 1945. As you know, General Tibbetts died Wednesday at the age of 92. Let's listen to 16.
As we came in from our initial point to the bomb release point, it was again routine. We were bothered not in the least by any kind of fighter opposition, no flak. We didn't see anything to cause us any concern, so that we were able to concentrate strictly on the bombing problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's see the next.
The bomb was released. We executed our turn away as we had been directed. The bomb blast hit us. It hit us in two different shock waves, the first being the stronger. This, as I say, was a perfectly unexciting and routine thing up until the point of taking a look at the damage that had been done. And then it was kind of, it was a little bit hard to realize. It was kind of inconceivable as to what we were looking at there.
Now, finally, here is what Tibbetts, the pilot of the Enola Gay, had to say in 18.
I look at it this way, that my part in this thing may well have been something that later or now that the U.S. government might be looking at somewhat with a guilt complex. And the feeling could be that the less said about it by the United States government, the better.
It was total war, Paul. God rest your soul. You're a heroic American. I wish we had more like you in the White House instead of what we have today. We have the biggest military on the planet. We spend trillions of dollars, and we have men who are afraid to use it. What is the good of a Navy if you don't use it? What is the good of all these boomer submarines if we don't use them? What is the good of this Air Force if we don't use them? What is the good of ICBMs, even with conventional warheads, if we don't use them? We've got a bunch of sissies running everything, and it's frightening to me because our enemies are anything but sissies. They don't have the power, but they have the guts, the enemy. And the day they grasp even one iota of the power we have, we are finished. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying to you? We're sitting here waiting for them to hit us when we have the power to take them out before they have the capacity to do so. I've never seen anything like this. Never. I've never, ever lived in this world that we're living in today. You know, so it's not an easy time to really be an adult. Maybe it's an easy time to be a child, but I'm not so sure of that either. What with the brainwashing in the schools and the drugging of our boys. I was thinking about that as well. It's really worrisome about whether we're ever going to be able to fight a war again. You've got an entire generation of boys in particular targeted by the mean-faced, clipped-haired women who run the school business, who are taking any boy with any kind of testosterone or spunk and saying they're mentally deranged, they have ADD or ADHD, and putting them on Ritalin and destroying their testosterone. In other words, turning them into little sissies, little easily manipulated robots. Now, you've got an enemy that's training their children to kill every day of the week. Hate and kill, hate and kill. And we've got a generation of boys being told not only to turn the other cheek, but to turn over and be raped by the enemy because they should be guilty for even being alive. Now, I got to ask you, how do you think this turns out? How do you think this ends? What kind of country are you living in that you let the perverts and the demonic elements of this country take over the whole social order? Because make no mistake about it, they're running the social order right now. They run the schools, they run the newspapers, they run the movie business. They have control of most of the mass media, and they are brainwashing an entire generation into submission and guilt. The enemy is doing the opposite. And I ask you, how do you think this works out at the end of the day? I'm quite concerned that we have an entire generation of boys being drugged by the mean-faced, clipped-haired czarinas of education. It is a conspiracy against males. Make no mistake about it.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. It is a fact of reality that in Tennessee and in the Southeast, there's a drought, and that a few towns in Tennessee have run out of water. You may say, well, what does it have to do with the nation? I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with the nation. Here's an article that just came out that a Tennessee town has run out of water, and that the drought tightening like a vise across the Southeast has threatened the water supply of cities large and small, and politicians, as usual, are scrambling for solutions, which they don't have. Now, here's a town 40 miles west of Chattanooga and 150 miles northwest of Atlanta where the water has run out. The mighty waterfall that fed the mountain hamlet has been reduced to a trickle, and now the creek running through the center of the town is dry. Now, there is no God that's going to come down and put water in that town. It's a cycle, and they've gone through it. But the question is, what are the poor folks going to do now? Where are they going to get their water from? How is the U.S. government going to help them? What is the solution? They're going to have to truck water in from where? And what about Atlanta, Georgia, that has a drought? How are they going to live without water? What are they going to do? What kind of restrictions are they going to put in? Lawns? Car washes? I don't know, but this is a very serious story. Now, it has nothing at all to do with global warming. It has to do with a drought. There are cycles of droughts in various parts of the country. And what you have here is a perfect storm. Overbuilt areas and a drought make for a rather amazing a set of circumstances for the people living there. You can't have lawns in arid regions and expect the water not to run out and still have your lawn. It's impossible. Don't tell that to Barbara Streisand, by the way. I'll take your calls on any other topic but this. 1-800-449-8255. Fred Thompson, by the way, has come through San Francisco, and he was asked what he thinks about civil unions. Now, what's interesting here is that, listen to clip 19.
So what is your position on civil unions, domestic partnerships for gay couples?
I do not think that they're a good idea. I do think that states have the power under our Constitution to make their own determination with regard to those matters. And states, with regard to matters that are traditionally state matters, ought to be free to do make those decisions themselves, even if Fred Thompson might disagree with them.
Well, he flip-flopped on that, but that got the lesbian, gay, transgendered AC/DC crowd that runs the Democrat Party crazy. Listen to clip 21.
I think it takes a lot of chutzpah to come into San Francisco, the mecca of the LGBT community, and to come into this community and to tell us that we're not worthy of being equal to other people.
Now, that statement is so twisted, it's hard to unravel it. Sometimes things are so twisted you can't unravel them. In other words, you come into San Francisco and you have to have a left-wing, wacko, homosexual view of the world, or you need not apply? Are you crazy? What country do you think you live in, Scott? Scotty boy, let me remind you, Mr. Democrat Scotty boy, you live in the United States of America where people are entitled to their opinion, even politicians. And secondly, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community is not San Francisco. It's a part of San Francisco. The problem is your perverted, twisted community now pretends that it runs the entire city. Now, you may own Gavin Newsom. You may have the board of supervisors, but the people are not lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexuals. The people are family-oriented, working their hearts out to raise their children in an insane environment run by the Democrat Party. And let me tell you something, Scotty boy. You live in the United States of America where freedom of speech still exists. That's why people like you can still get away with what you get away with, my friend, is what I'd like to say to him, which is what I just did. So here's a San Francisco Democrat chairman says that Fred Thompson has no right to come here and say that he's against civil unions for homosexuals, meaning gay marriage. It's unbelievable. And they twist that into telling people they're not worthy of being equal to other people. Well, I would say that the people who behave that way have determined that they're not equal to other people, not Fred Thompson. Don't tell me that that behavior is equal to that of your grandfather, because if it was, you wouldn't be here, Scotty. I don't know if you learned about the birds and the bees, but the way it works is you need a boy and a girl to make a baby, Scott. It can't come from a boy and a boy or a girl and a girl, unless you twist nature around in a factory, Scott. That's how it works. So you're the people who have said you're not equal to other people by your behavior and by your demands, Scotty. That's how most of us see it. And all the brainwashing in the world, Scotty, is not going to change the reality of most Americans. You can lie to yourself, but you can't lie to others. And you could lie to yourself some of the time, and you could lie to yourself all of the time. But you can't lie to all of the people all of the time and expect them to get on their hands and knees and say, we agree with you. No, the Democrat Party is in the hands of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, Islamo-fascist, illegal alien mobs. That's who's running Nancy Pelosi's viewpoints. That, and I should add the eco-freaks, by the way, the global warming religionists. That is why the Democrat Party is in a lower state of rating than George Bush. The people themselves can't stand it, including the Democrats in the state of California. They've had enough of these wackos, these left-wing twisted eraser heads, is what I think. Now, if you think differently, I'm going to change your mind over the next 15 years. You know, coming up in a few moments here on the Savage Nation, I have a wonderful interview with Pat Buchanan, who I agree with, I'd say, on 90, 95% of his positions. You wouldn't expect him to agree with everybody all the time. I would say I agree with the San Francisco Democratic Party 0% of the time. That's because they represent everything that's anti-family, anti-American, anti-police, anti-military, anti-science, anti-religion, anti-everything that I believe in is what the Democrats in San Francisco stand for. How about you? Do you think that homosexuals are in the same manner as your grandparents and deserve the right to marry, and if so, why? Because it's not true. It's not true. There's truth and there's falsehood. There's not a religious person on earth, Muslim, Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, that believes that. The only people who believe it are those trying to destroy the family, the traditional family. Most gay people don't believe it. Most gay people don't want to be married. They are what they are. They're not ashamed of what they are, but they understand that the gay marriage story is being pushed by perhaps 1% of the gay community and is being pushed strictly for political reasons that have nothing to do with sexual reasons. They are using this issue to fracture the traditional family, which is the brick of civilization. And when you break the brick of civilization, you destroy society, the entire society. And I've said to you yesterday, I'll say it again, our biggest problem with the fanatic Muslim is not our foreign policy. It's our twisted social policies. They don't want their sons to become gay, and they don't want their daughters to become a Jezebel, and they're willing to die to stop it. And I am the only one in America saying it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
In your article, you suggest that social conservatives are seriously considering denouncing the GOP and supporting a third party. What are their main concerns? What are they up in arms about? Like, I don't know, right?
Well, the main concern of social conservatives, I would think, is the possibility of a Giuliani nomination when Rudy Giuliani has been militantly pro-choice on abortion. He favors affirmative action. He is pro-gay rights. He marches in gay pride parades. And he converted New York City into a sanctuary city for illegal aliens. All of these are really beyond the pale for social conservatives. And social conservatives came into the Republican Party in order to change the culture and recapture it away from the cultural left. And Rudy Giuliani belongs to the cultural left.
You describe something very different forming back in the 60s, continuing through the 80s. Who's responsible for this coalition? How is it put together?
Well, the coalition came out of the Barry Goldwater movement of 1964, which was basically a movement designed to do two things. One, recapture the leadership of the country because it was felt the liberal establishment was not prosecuting the war against Soviet communism with the kind of ingenuity and strength and purpose that it needed. And secondly, the movement was ignited and pushed by decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court dictated to the American people, court-ordered busing for racial balance, legalizing pornography, making abortion a constitutional right, making homosexuality a constitutional right, throwing prayer out of the public schools. This was the Goldwater movement was a healthy reactionary movement to a revolution that was being imposed on America from above, and it was a reaction to weakness and lassitude on the part of the national leadership in prosecuting the war on communism. So these great forces pulled together, and Ronald Reagan, when he came in 1980, he added to them the idea of cutting taxes to energize the private economy. And these, the social and cultural issues, the foreign policy issues, and the economic issues, all came together to create the great conservative movement that reached, I think, its apogee in the presidency of Ronald Reagan.
Well, clearly I agree with you. As you've described, Giuliani as a social liberal. Such things existed in the Republican Party back in the 60s. But what did the Rockefeller Republicans have to do with molding the Giulianis of today?
The Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party was basically great society republicanism at the state level. Rockefeller had a huge welfare state. He had a huge spending in New York State. He believed in big government. He was socially liberal, or what they called socially moderate in those times. And he was a big government man. And he was an internationalist and a globalist. And the American people at the grassroots wanted something different. And the Goldwater movement was a grassroots movement to recapture the Republican Party from the Dewey Rockefeller wing, which had dominated it and dictated its presidential candidates for generations. And the 1964 coup at the Cowell Palace, the takeover of the Republican Party, that was the great victory of the conservative movement. It led, of course, to a political disaster in November because Lyndon Johnson was able to portray himself as a hardline anti-communist by his bombing in North Vietnam. And so the movement went down to defeat in 1964. But having been blooded, the younger people in the movement, they moved into the positions vacated by all these establishment Republicans who had been swept out. And eventually, they nominated Ronald Reagan, and because of the Carter debacle, Reagan got into office, and he did some great things for America. And the United States won the Cold War.
Okay, so take us back to the present. Why is this coalition that was built up over the course of 20 years seeming to come apart?
What's happened, Michael, is in one sense, conservatives are the victims of their own success. With the collapse of the Soviet Empire and the breakup of the Soviet Union and the retreat of the Red Army from Central and Eastern Europe, what happened was that anti-communism, which was the most powerful glue that held conservatives together, that dissolved. And conservatives divided on where we should go in terms of foreign policy. Some are internationalist and interventionist. Others believe in a strong America First foreign policy with a strong national defense and staying out of wars that are none of our business. And so that great divide, that began there. Secondly, George Bush the First came into office and became what Fred Barnes called a big government conservative, which is what we thought was a contradiction in terms, an oxymoron. I mean, he had a quota bill. He had expanded the environmental law restrictions and regulations. He raised taxes. He expanded government. And that's why I ran against him in 1992. So we split on that issue. And since, and today, we are split on foreign policy issues, you know, neo-isolationism as against interventionism, on big government conservatism versus small government, on social conservatism versus Giuliani's version in New York. On all of these issues, we are divided. You got tax cutters versus budget hawks. And all these issues, Republicans and conservatives are divided. You know, as was said in the Bible, in my father's house there are many mansions. And the Republican Party has become something of a Tower of Babel. I mean, you got Tom Tancredo, who's got a very strong conservative voting record, attacking John McCain for his stance on immigration. What is the conservative stance there? On free trade, many of us believe free trade has gutted our industries and is destroying the American dollar and is exporting the real manufacturing vitality of the country. But many of those Republicans are absolute free traders. So on all these issues, we don't have we don't have a New Testament. We don't have an Old Testament. We don't have a Bible, and we don't have a Pope. And we don't have a leader who defines conservatism for us all the way Reagan did. So I think this is the malaise in the conservative movement.
Is the recent success of the Democrats real or a product of Republican failure? Or have they managed to successfully exploit the situation in their own right?
Well, I think it's the one reason the Democrats succeeded in 1992 was that foreign policy was off the table after America's perceived victory in the Cold War. When the Soviet Union collapsed and the Soviet Empire fell apart, the Cold War and foreign policy were off the table. On economics, the Bush 1 record was not good, and Bush refused to go after Clinton and campaign on the social, cultural, and moral issues where Clinton was vulnerable. So as a result, you got Bill Clinton for 8 years. But one problem conservatives have today is that this social, moral, cultural revolution of the 1960s that Nixon and Reagan ran against and won 49 states, that has captured ever-increasing numbers of young Americans. So that right now the issue of abortion is, the country is divided on that. Even on issues of homosexual rights, more and more young Americans are in favor of gay marriage. So on all these issues, the country has moved to a point where we are almost equally divided between the morally traditional people and the what you might call the Woodstock generation values. And so on these things, these issues, these are some of the reasons why we're losing the country.
Pat, thanks for coming on the program. Listen, I don't know if you saw this, but we both made the list of top 100 most influential conservatives. I hope there are no hard feelings with me being at number 63 and yourself at number 80.
I'm astonished I'm on the list. But frankly, that's fine. I'm delighted to hear it. And frankly, I hope we both have a little more influence on because the country doesn't look like it's headed to me. It's headed in the right direction.
Well, I agree with you. The country is absolutely not headed in the right direction. Thank you, Patrick
Savage.
Cannon.
Thank you very much, Michael.
My good friend Selwyn Duke is here today. In his new article, he discusses if Iraq can meld 21st century democracy with 7th century morals. Good evening, Selwyn.
Hi, Michael. Good to be with you again. You know, Michael, as you've said yourself, Iraq may not be well suited to democracy, and that's what I want to talk about today. Because, see, our real problem in Iraq is political correctness, a political correctness that causes us to prescribe Western world solutions to third world problems. Our problem in Iraq hasn't been winning the war, but winning the peace. Toppling Saddam Hussein was easy enough, but toppling the medieval attitudes of a fractious and often ferocious people is a different matter.
What do we prescribe as a remedy for this malaise? A dalliance with democracy?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right, Michael. Look, President Bush has said that democracies don't go to war with one another. This much reminds me of the quaint naivete of a century ago that dubbed World War I the war to end all wars. Now we have the political system to end all wars. Now, Michael, it's not that our desire to democratize Afghanistan and Iraq grew from pure fantasy. After World War II, we installed democracies in the Axis powers and watched Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent Italy, develop vibrant economies and stable governments. And it's also true that democratic forms of government provide checks and balances that temper the caprice of a ruler. A president's desire to launch an imprudent military campaign will often be countered by cooler heads and bodies that share power. So, you certainly could conclude that democracies don't go to war with one another, yet it occurs to me that a truer statement may be that democracies have not yet gone to war with one another. Then, an even truer statement may be that democracies don't always remain democracies. They descend into tyranny. Then they may go to war with one another. Michael, those scratching their heads haven't learned from history, only from pep talks. We often view democracy as the pinnacle of governmental evolution. But the truth is that civilizations have tended to transition not from tyranny to democracy, but democracy to tyranny, like the ancient Romans. And, as for recent history, We may be seeing this pattern with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. While elected democratically, he increasingly stifles opposition and consolidates power. Now, would anyone bet the house that we'll still have democracy in Venezuela in 10 years? Then, Michael, we have the de facto dictatorships, like Zimbabwe, where rigged elections ensure the leader will be democratically chosen until power no longer intrigues him or he tastes cold steel. And Ben Franklin understood this gravitation toward tyranny well. When asked what kind of government had been created when he emerged from the Constitutional Convention, he said, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it."
But Selwyn, you know and I know that even if we can successfully install democratic republics in countries such as Iraq and Afghanistan, what makes us think they can keep it with the retrograde Islamofascists at their throats?
Well, Michael, it's basically all about political correctness. To average Westerners, all groups are essentially the same, despite profound religious and cultural differences. If a civilization, be it Muslim or Christian, Eastern or Western, suffers under the yoke of tyranny, it's only due to a twist of fate that has bestowed the wrong system on it. Change that system and voila, all live happily ever after. But what eludes these Pollyannas is that politics doesn't emerge in a vacuum, but is a reflection of a far deeper realm, the spiritual, moral one. And alluding to this, Ben Franklin also observed, "Only a moral and virtuous people are capable of freedom. The more corrupt and vicious a society becomes, the more it has need of masters." Michael, such wisdom wasn't unusual before we were beset by our collective naivete. For instance, in 1901, while warning that the Cubans of the day were incapable of stable self-government, Senator Orville Platt wrote, "In many respects, they are like children." Is this paternalistic? Maybe. Is it a justification for imperialism? In certain cases, perhaps, but it doesn't matter. A truth doesn't cease to be a truth simply because it's placed in the service of deceit. And just as people vary individually in terms of spiritual and moral development, so do they collectively. Hey, the ancient Aztecs weren't the ancient Athenians, the Carthaginians weren't the Romans, and the Iraqis are not us. Besides, paternalism is a lot safer than political correctness. Speaking of political correctness, Michael, President Bush has said that all people want freedom. Well, that's nice and very idealistic. But, you know, technically, Bush is right. All people do want freedom. But what's overlooked is that wanting and being able to acquire are very different things. Listen, a common human desire for freedom isn't enough to perpetuate democracy. After all, humans have lots of common desires. Everyone desires health, but many still smoke, gorge themselves on unhealthy foods, and drink too much. Virtually everyone desires money, but many aren't willing to put their noses to the grindstone. Almost all desire good families, but many still play the human monkey wrench as they make their loved ones' lives miserable. Look, it's common for humans to have desires. It's human nature to desire many things that are good. And it's also human nature to have frailty that renders a person unwilling or unable to do what's necessary to attain them.
This is totally crazy. The Bush administration actually believes that the 7th century retrogrades want peace and equality?
Yes, Michael, absolutely. We've put the cart before the horse. Many years ago, we understood that civilization was a prerequisite for healthy government. So, we didn't take a diamond in the rough and assume the problem was that it didn't sit in a fancy gold ring. No, we sent missionaries and Christianized and educated the darker regions of the world. Sure, being human, Western motivations weren't always pure, but the wisest among us knew that Western-type institutions were fruits that naturally grew on the tree of civilization. Nowadays, Michael, it's considered uncivilized to call people uncivilized, and even if we still had faith and the understanding that spiritual health must precede the political variety, the planting of crosses in the Muslim world is received no better than the planting of bombs. The fact remains, though, that people are different and cultures can be cultivated or callow. And I know it may be uncomfortable for many to contemplate this truth, but look, all the wishing in the world doesn't change reality. Democracy isn't a deity, government isn't God. And in a morally corrupt society, The only difference between democracy and dictatorship is the rate at which the dark cloud of tyranny descends on the people.
Oh, how culturally chauvinistic of you, Selwyn.
You're right, Michael. I plead guilty. But if it makes anyone feel any better, know that I don't ascribe a sanctified state to any culture, including my own. The truth is, most people throughout the ages have been incapable of maintaining freedom, which is why man has most often lived in tyranny. In fact, I know that our moral decay ensures regression to tyranny. And by the way, we see this already in burgeoning laws that squelch freedom and governments that become ever more intrusive. In fact, Michael, it's our ignorance of this phenomenon that contributes to our deification of democracy. It's easy to view democracy as a mountaintop from which descent is impossible when we're oblivious to how our republic is even now being lost. Sure, a democratic republic can be the most stable of governments, but often forgotten is that it rests on a foundation composed of the moral fiber of the people. When that foundation deteriorates enough, the edifice collapses. And, Michael, getting philosophical, I'll say that part of what blinds us to this truth is moral relativism. It makes it easy for us to believe that a people's character has no bearing on government, because relativism states that no character can be better than any other. This prevents us from grasping both why we won't be able to keep our republic and why one like it can't be perpetuated in certain rough-hewn lands. Look, how can we possibly understand how lacking character breeds tyranny when we think the lack is merely the embrace of a different but equal value system? So, Michael, perhaps we could describe the problem as a failure of the increasingly childish to understand how to govern children. And if you don't think creeping juvenility plagues us, consider that, although we have traitors within and barbarians without, we're ever more concerned with indulging frivolity and extolling deviancy. Many nowadays just aren't instilled with the morality and discipline that would enable them to govern themselves. Nor do they know much about our constitution or system of government. But hey, they do know how to pierce and paint their bodies, put prophylactics on bananas, and by golly, they sure do care about fighting global warming so that Adam and Steve won't have to honeymoon at the North Pole.
Yeah, right. That's a joke. Ha, ha, ha.
So, Michael, with priorities like these, I suspect we'll learn firsthand how democracy is no savior. It's an apparatus of civilization, not the author of it. But in the meantime, we'll stumble about engaging in nation building, oblivious to the nature of the foundation we're toiling on. The only thing missing is a cry to take up the democratic man's burden. Of course, all cultures could conceivably be equally capable of sustaining democracy, that is, if they were all morally equal. But that, my friends, is something only a child could believe.
Thanks, Selwyn.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show, and God bless you and your audience.
Some of the headlines from MichaelSavage.com. The University of Delaware has a student indoctrination program that is required that teaches that all white people are racist. This is what the deviants and the anti-white, anti-Christian deviants are doing at least one university. Bush proposes six-fold increase in aid to the Palestinians. Madrid bombers. Remember that little story about the bombings in Madrid by the Islamofascists? The ringleader has been set free. Answers sought on TB flyer. Senators are demanding to know why a Mexican national infected with a contagious form of TB was allowed to cross the border 76 times. There are no answers, as you well know. Islamophobia is used to crush Muslim dissent, says a panel. In Britain, the land of the crushed and the deviant, British students and faculty have been forced to dress as Muslims to promote multiculturalism. That's right. I'm telling you the exact truth. These stories are all on MichaelSavage.com from press reports around the world. around the world. Here's another useful idiot. Supermodel Naomi Campbell, the woman who likes to throw cell phones at assistants, has kissed the ring of Hugo Chavez, the dictator, joining the latest in a long line of Judases, from Sean Penn to others. I do not know the attraction of this dictator to the fools of Hollywood. I cannot understand it, truthfully. Why would Kevin Spacehead, Sean Pencilneck, Danny Gloveholder, and Harry Belafonte go and kiss the ring of a man like Chavez is something only God can figure out. Now joining that list of fools and useful idiots is so-called supermodel Naomi Campbell talking to the dictator of Venezuela. I would say if they love the country so much, they should move there instead of burdening us with their stupidity and vapidity. I mean, I don't understand it. They hate this country. They visit a dictatorship, and yet they don't move there. Here's another story. The cost of helping one junkie quit drugs in Britain costs over $2.5 million. It would be cheaper to jail him for life. Did you hear that? Here's another little story. An extra Halloween, an extra hour of Halloween daylight? How did that happen? Thanks to the candy lobby. Today I saw moronic, dumb mothers in Marin County, California, feeding their children leftover candy from Halloween and then perhaps giving them a Ritalin tablet to go with it. They have no idea what they're doing to their children. They are as dumb as a doorpost when it comes to feeding children right. That's all I can say to you. Al-Qaeda has declared a cyber jihad on the West. Did you hear that one? Yeah, well, what does that mean? I don't know what it means, but they're trying to do it to us. The big story is the University of Delaware requiring students to undergo ideological re-education. In the university's own materials, they consider this shocking program as a treatment for students' incorrect attitudes and beliefs. The Orwellian program requires the approximately 7,000 students in Delaware's residence halls to adopt highly specific university-approved views on issues ranging from politics to race, sexuality, sociology, moral philosophy, and environmentalism. This is a flagrant violation of students' rights to freedom of conscience and freedom from compelled speech. It is being forced down the students' throats by the radical homosexual mafia at the university. The fact of the matter is, it's a residence life education program. It is right out of Stalinist Russia. They're teaching children in one-on-one sessions questions such as the following, quote, when did you discover your sexual identity? Students who express discomfort with this type of questioning often meet with disapproval from their research associates who write reports on these one-on-one sessions and deliver these reports to their superiors. One student identified in a write-up as an RA's worst one-on-one session was a young woman who stated that she was tired of having, quote, diversity shoved down her throat. But they're doing it anyway. They are trying to teach students that systemic oppression exists in our society, and they're trying to brainwash them into taking on viewpoints that they know to be wrong. Now, I want to tell you something. There was an old case about the First Amendment, and that case is the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in West Virginia State Board of Education versus Barnett, going way back to 1943. And it was a case decided during World War II that remains the law of the land. In this case, Justice Robert Jackson, writing for the court, declared the following, and you liberals better listen to it because you'll become fascists. The Supreme Court wrote, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is that no official, high or petty, can prescribe what shall be orthodox in politics, nationalism, religion, or other matters of opinion or force citizens to confess by word or act their faith therein, close quote. The diversity sessions are fascistic. The brainwashing put out by CAIR and other fascist organizations are fascistic and un-American. The fact that the university views its students as patients in need of treatment for some sort of moral sickness shows a lack of respect not only for students' basic rights, but for the Constitution itself. The fact of the matter is these students should sue the university, as should any American any American who is forced to hold views that he finds reprehensible, whether they be views of politics or sexuality. I'm Michael Savage. We're living in very dangerous times. If you want to read this story about white students being taught that they're racist at the University of Delaware, go on to michaelsavage.com. Here is another story. A rat judge in San Francisco has saved a rapist killer from execution. The rat judge had more sympathy for the piece of garbage who raped and killed a 17-year-old than he did for the man who did the raping and the killing. That's the kind of judges we have in San Francisco today. Another story is that the first congressman of Muslim heritage, Ellison, wants to ban the photo ID as a requirement for voting. Now, why any congressman would want to water down any form of requirements for voting is pretty amazing to me. The only reason could be that he wants illegal aliens or enemies of America to continue voting or to begin voting. This must be fought by all elected officials. We must require photo IDs to vote in federal elections. But Ellison, the first Muslim congressman, is against any form of photo ID. He has been joined in this by the ever-present John Conyers in this statement. Pagan holidays have been added to excused absences at Marshall University. That's right. Pagan holidays are now added to excused absences in a university in the United States of America. Here is another story. Israel, a sitting duck, afraid to act, fears upsetting national suicide plan put forth by Bush and Condoleezza Rice. After all, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. In this case, it's the egg of Israel that must go, just as it was the egg of Serbia that was broken by Clinton. It's the egg of Israel being scrambled by Bush. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.